great right now, but here on Pojo Recaps, everything is Wakanda Forever, as we are still talking about Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, here on Pojo Recaps, getting feedback, doing all the fun stuff here on Pojo. I am Josh Wiggler, I'm out of the van, I'm here, I'm ready to talk about Black Panther with my guy, Kevin Mahadeo. Kevin, how's it going?
It's good. Yes, right, Josh. We have freed you from the back of the van. We have unchained you and ungagged you
to
allow you to speak on this movie.
It was wild.
Very briefly.
My experience was crazy. I was just walking down the street, and then something like, I must have chloroformed me, I think, is what happened here.
It was hard to get a hold of chloroform, but once I got it, I knew that you were the first person I had to use it on.
Yeah, well, that wouldn't be a big surprise. But yeah, so you did that to me. You locked me up. I wasn't able to talk about the podcast. Huge props to you and Jason and Sasha for holding it down. Really fun podcast on the Everything is Super podcast feed last week from the three of you talking about Black Panther. Also a great Black Panther podcast from Grace and Ariel and Chantel talking about Black Panther on Pojo Recaps Theater. But now, the moment you've all been waiting for. My opinion on Black Panther Forever.
The white man's opinion, the most important opinion we can ask for here.
Critical that I get to say a thing or two about Black Panther Forever. Wakanda Forever, sorry. So we're talking about Black Panther. We've got a lot to get into here. We've got a lot of feedback from all of you out there who have written in, whether it's on the Discord or if you've emailed us, super@poshowrecaps.com. We got a lot of takes. Just looking at it real quick, most of the takes are like, I loved it.
Yeah, I mean, rightfully so. I think... As I stated, this is probably a top tier Phase 4 movie for me.
You've been pretty low on Phase 4, so this is not a huge surprise.
You know, I've actually been thinking about this recently, doing a really mental Phase 4 recap in my head. And yeah, the more time has gone on, I think the more down I've been on Phase 4. I think there are bright, shining spots for me, but overall, I think it's Wakanda Forever, Thor. Honestly, it's all the sequels. I hate to be like most of the new movies weren't doing it for me, but I think that's almost where I'm landing here because I love Wakanda Forever. I really love Thor. And I really enjoyed No Way Home.
Yeah.
The more I think about No Way Home, the more I'm not down on it. I still really enjoy it. But the more my opinion of this is half a movie or this is two movies kind of like stitched together Frankenstein style wise is there. But Wakanda Forever is a great bright spot to end Phase 4 in. It's a phenomenal film to me, and I think the response has been good. Numbers have been great.
Yeah, how's it doing? Let's take a quick look at how Black Panther Wakanda Forever
is
doing.
It's like 270 or something, or 207. It's quite a bit of money.
A quick scan of the Wikipedia page as of November 20th at 12:49 p.m. It is $546.3 million at the box office. I don't know if that's domestic or if that's global. I would expect it's probably global. Those are good numbers.
Those are great numbers.
Especially in today's timeline.
Oh, yeah.
Black Panther's killing it. No surprise. Doing quite well.
Well, Black Panther isn't killing anyone. But,
no.
You know.
No killing. It came pretty close, I felt like. Sure, it came pretty close. Of course, we assume you've seen the movie. The movie's been out for a bit. We did the spoiler podcast. PSRT was talking about spoilers, too. We're talking spoilers. There's really not going to be a big warning other than this, right out of the way. Anything that happened in the movie is fair game here, including the fact that, she didn't kill Namor, which would have been a travesty, considering that he was the best part of the movie for me, for sure, because he's awesome, and I want more Namor immediately.
Truly a Mr. Steal Your Man in the context he should be, because goddamn.
So Teenoch Huerta, this was like his big thing, right? Like this is his debut?
I think so. I mean, he might be
they did like
elsewhere,
the whole and introducing was a really incredible first performance in a big feature film here stateside at the very least, it seems like.
Coming in hot on so many levels here. Phenomenal character, phenomenal acting.
This is not fair to say that this is his first stateside feature film. He was in The Forever Purge, Kevin.
Oh my. The one Purge. I've only seen the first Purge.
Yeah.
I think it's a phenomenal premise, but...
Is he only going to be allowed to make movies that have the word forever in the title?
Fantastic Forever. I don't, Fantastic Forever.
Yeah.
There it is.
That could be.
You know?
That could be pretty good. He was incredible. There's just a lot of things about this movie that were really, really great, Kevin. Other than my theatrical experience. experience. Yeah, my theatrical experience wasn't very good, unfortunately.
You mentioned this, and I wanted to save it for the podcast, but yeah, you said that you did not have a great theater experience. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about your opinions, because certainly there's an entire podcast about my opinions here. But let's hear, what is your theater experience?
We'll get into it. We'll talk about Black Panther. We currently have a cat holding it down here on our side of the podcast that hopefully shall not be visible to you. Kevin and I are in person in my apartment, and Dougie the cat really wants to give some opinions about Wakanda Forever. So we'll see if Dougie's got anything to say. We'll talk Black Panther. We'll take some feedback as well. I'll give you some of my takes on the movie. Then we'll just like kind of, I think, shoot the shit about what's going on in Marvel right now, as you and I are in the process of signing off on Marvel for a little bit, at least, as we reshift our focus to the DCEU. You and I are going to be starting our DCEU watch here pretty soon, a couple
Maybe
of weeks from now.
We can call it the DCEU. Good night, everyone.
How is that going to work in the... So the world outside your window may not be great right
Neither
now.
Neither is it on this podcast.
Yeah, it's going to be something like that. We've got time to workshop all of that. But you and I are going to be talking about the DCEU, in case people had not heard that announcement. I know you talked about it on the Black Panther podcast last week. But Kevin and I are going to walk through all of the DC Expanded universe? Is it
extended?
Extended universe. Recently, under new ownership here, Kevin.
Indeed.
Which we'll talk about that as well, as we segue into that part of the conversation. But this is sort of our last opportunity, or one of our last opportunities, to talk about Marvel for a minute. And so there's some things that have been happening recently that I know you and I want to give our takes on. So we will try and do that here in the podcast as well. So that's what you're getting into on the pod this week. So I did go and see Black Panther Wakanda Forever this past week. Kevin, I was away on a trip, not actually in the back of a van, while Black Panther came out. And so I was doing everything I could to like proverbially be in the back of a van. I wanted to avoid spoilers at all costs.
Did you accomplish that goal?
Mostly. There were a couple of things that I'd heard. I'd heard that Julia Louis-Dreyfus was in this, and I'll agree with the take. Like, it kind of took me out. Kind of took me out to have like Val in here, and I was like, Val and Everett Ross are a thing is a little weird to me.
No, that seems right to me.
Does
I love
it?
That. I think that
she
that
just
tracks.
Seems so high level, and he just feels so mid as far as like his placement within the organizations that like. This was a thing? Really?
I don't know. He was dealing with the Winter Soldier and Captain America. I think
guess.
That's pretty high up. You're not going to just be a schlub who's dealing with
I
those
guess.
Types of deals, you know?
I guess I am sort of in, like, the Sasha mold of, like, I just think Bilbo Baggins. Like, it's a little hard for me to, like, kind of separate that out. So I'd heard that she was in it. That would have been, I don't know if it would have been nice to have been a surprise or if it was better to be kind of prepped for it. So I knew that she was around. And I knew that Killmonger was going to feature into it in some degree. But those were really the big spoilers that I had coming into it. By and large, the rest of it were either assumptions that I had coming into it that, like, sure, he's probably going to take the mantle by the end of the movie. And then I don't think that there was really anything else that I had, like, major expectations one way or the other. I didn't know about T'Challa, the second coming of T'Challa.
Yes.
T'Challa
I don't think
Jr.
anyone knew about that. I thought it was a very nice little surprise and a good, like, you know, homage right there.
That was that was sweet, yeah. And I'm excited about that. And, like, what, we think Young Avenger, maybe?
I don't know.
Or is this like in 15 years we'll be ready to do T'Challa?
Yeah, I think this is a thing of just like legacy goes on. I don't think it's so much of a setup for Young Avengers. I honestly think this movie did a good job keeping Wakanda self-contained, you know? And I think it might stick that way for a minute.
Yeah. So I hadn't heard about that. I certainly hadn't heard that they were going to kill off Angela Bassett.
Man.
Because if I had,
what a moment.
I might have just not gone and seen the movie.
Wow.
Because I was not thrilled with that decision that was made. How dare you? You know? You've got Angela Bassett, and you've got her in the Marvel Cinematic Universe doing work as Angela Bassett does. You're going to kill her off? You're going to take her out of here?
It's the Marissa Tomei effect. You really lost some great ones.
You're going to kill her as opposed to what she should have done, which... Make her the Black Panther. She'd be incredible. Queen Ramonda, Black Panther. That was right there. So I was really sad when she died. I was very bummed. I thought that she was the best part of the movie up to that point for sure. She was just so good. The scene where she comes to the UN.
It's incredible.
It just lays it down. It was so great.
Someone was saying that she was acting like her entire financial career hinged on the success of this film.
Maybe. I don't know. But she was really great. I know that there's been a little bit of momentum of, like, best supporting actress, Angela Bassett.
She's really good. That scene alone. And it is one of those things where I doubt it because of the Academy, but...
We've had two different Jokers win Oscars within the last, you know, 15-some-odd years. I feel like we could probably... I think we're past this. I think you could win an acting award for a superhero movie at this point.
I mean, to be fair, it's usually post-mortem, but...
True. Well, not Joaquin. Joaquin is still standing. Yeah. But we...
Which, what a choice, but whatever.
I don't believe that Angela Bassett has won an Oscar before, so it's about damn time, and I would be psyched if it was for this. I thought she was incredible in this movie. And then a lot more that I really, really liked... But I had a very bad theatrical experience, unfortunately. As I'm to understand it, Kevin, you had a very pristine theatrical
experience. It's a balance in all things, I guess. We are the balance here. What happened? What happened at your theater?
Well, you had like picture perfect sound,
amazing sound.
You had like appropriate levels of like silence in the theater, and like probably the theater popping off at all the right times. My theater was just popping off the entire time because there was like a family that was going nuclear in the middle of the theater and very young children that were there, and it was really a late showing and they probably shouldn't have been there, and the parents could only match the children's energy, so they're just like screaming at the kids.
Oh, well, that's a wonderful cycle.
And it was like happening during like soft, quiet, emotional moments of the movie. The worst one was at the very end when she's finally sitting to like listen to the breeze hear her brother and feel her brother again. They were just screaming in the theater.
Jesus.
So kind of what happened was I was just very angry watching Wakanda Forever, which in hindsight, as I've processed it a little bit more, was like, maybe to some degree, like I was feeling what Shuri is feeling for a lot of the movie. So it was actually like kind of like the unfairness of this, of like, it's not fair that he's not here anymore. It's not fair that this has happened, was kind of how I was feeling. It's like, it's not fair that all these people are talking in the movie that I'm just trying to watch. So I was very mad, and I'm really looking forward to giving it another shot on streaming. I think I will appreciate it in a controlled environment. I really wish that this movie was one of those day and dates.
I mean, it's almost like that is a great progression towards how a model should be for existing in this world and watching entertainment, is having the option of either going to a theater or watching at home, depending on your personal preference.
Yeah. So there was stuff like that was really hard for the theatrical experience. What did Dougie think? Dougie, did you have any thoughts that you wanted to share?
Any opinions here?
Doesn't seem like he's got much to say right now.
He's hanging out right behind me on the couch. It's adorable.
Yes. He's like, go on. Tell me more about Black Panther. I'm not going to see it anyway. So we're going to spoil this for you, Dougie. Apologies for that. So the theatrical experience wasn't so great, and that definitely impacted my enjoyment of the movie. But I did feel like there were times where, like, okay, Shuri is so mad, and so am I. We're on the same page.
Killmonger's right. Let's burn it all down.
I kind of was feeling pretty vengeful at a certain point. I do think that if I had taken the herb, I would have seen Killmonger in that moment. I'd be like, all right, we're burning this theater down to the studs. But no, I by and large, I really enjoyed it. Your favorite of Phase 4, you have said.
The more I think about it, I think it is for me. The themes
just the
really
movies,
hit.
Or are you counting Disney Plus shows as well?
Probably counting Disney Plus shows. Okay. If we're really pulling it in there, I would maybe incorporate She-Hulk in the higher upper echelons. It's one of the ones in Hawkeye, I guess.
I did appreciate that Jason and Sasha were able to come onto the podcast with great CG to discuss.
I know.
That was nice for them.
All the money went.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So even other than She-Hulk, you would say, like, this would be top of the line.
I think so. I mean, look, I know there's a lot out there, especially in the TV, that people really liked, and I still enjoyed it. But again, the more I've sat with Phase 4 and even a lot of the TV stuff, I think it is Marvel's trying to find its footing on a lot of ways. I think it's trying to find a balance of, like, how to move into the future, how to maybe tell individual stories, how to build towards something without knowing what you're building towards yet. And with the TV, I think it's figuring out TV. I think they did a really good job with She-Hulk because it's episodic and it was a comedy, and that really lends itself to television really well. I mean, some of the most successful TV or long-running TV or sitcoms. And they, you know, I think they work the ending really well, whereas, like, and they comment on the fact that so many of their other shows end in the same typical way. You know, Loki for me was touch and go. There was a lot I really liked, but ultimately didn't really hit as hard as it could have. I, as much as I love WandaVision, I love, what was it, 9/10 of it, I suppose. I forgot how many episodes exactly.
I think it was 9.
Then 8/9 of it.
Yeah.
But that last episode, I can't get over, and especially how it ended. So, yeah, it's tough, but that's probably where it's going to land for me. I think Wakanda Forever is at the top. Probably maybe She-Hulk and Thor tied, and then we can discuss the rest of them, I guess, from there. What about you? Where are you on this?
Well, I think that, like, I need to separate myself out from the experience I had watching it, because it was a very unpleasant experience watching it, and try and do, like, some meditation on, like, the actual movie itself. I think to some degree, like, I need to see it again, because I probably missed some subtleties here and there. I think that it was a really powerful movie. I think it was cathartic in a lot of ways. I think that it is rare. I can't even really think of a real comp to this movie in terms of a humongously budgeted, highly anticipated blockbuster that is effectively a eulogy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
What even comes close to that? I'm really blanking to consider. So there was just this. There was this mournful quality about it that felt very fitting, considering Chadwick Boseman and his contributions to the world, let alone this character and this franchise, that really begged and demanded to be acknowledged in a major way. I think that there is a world where this specific story that's being told here, especially with Namor and his people and their relation to Wakanda, that I felt a lot of the time, and I think that this was like, I was having some like rage thoughts about this while watching the movie. It was like, T'Challa should be part of this. Like, this is a story that he specifically should be in on.
Yeah.
Like, his whole move to like bring Wakanda into the light, and we're going to be part of the public conversation. Like, that is such an interesting position to have in contrast to Namor in this movie and the history that those two characters have from the comic books and everything. Like, I wanted that, and I was so mad. But obviously, the world moved in a very tragically different direction where that just wasn't possible. And I think, you know, there's been a lot of like, I've been seeing like some of the reaction to it of like, they should have recasted him and all of this. Like, that is just, it was not a possibility. There was just no world where whether or not it was appropriate is a totally different question, but there was just no way that this team was going to assemble together to do a movie with somebody else in that role.
Yeah.
Like, Ryan Coogler is not able to make this movie without acknowledging it as like, this is like a funeral in a lot of ways. And so there's just sort of, there's like an individuality to that as an identity for this film that like almost makes me feel like ranking it is so arbitrary, like as it always is.
I would say all rankings are pretty arbitrary.
Arbitrary, but. And reductive, I believe, is the phrase around these parts. Like, it usually is anyway, but it feels like even more of a fruitless exercise right now when it carried a lot of not just the cultural significance, but it felt like we've all lost stuff over the last few years. And this was the loss of Chadwick felt remarkably unfair and sudden. And to have a movie that processed that, and for many people was really emotionally cathartic in that way, I feel like is such a unique, rare thing to have that I'm not glad that we have it. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, for sure.
But like, I am, I'm moved by the fact that we have it. So I have a hard time like placing it anywhere within like, cause I don't know that like I enjoyed it. You know what I mean by that? Like, I was sad. I was upset. I hate that it has to exist this way, but I think the way in which it ended up existing and the ways in which they chose to rise to the challenge that was presented to them were really compelling. The fact that it is, ultimately it becomes Shuri's story, but for so much of it, it felt like it was just an ensemble picture was a really interesting way of telling the story, I thought.
Yeah, the ensemble piece is sort of what I really liked about it as well. Everyone else stepped up, I think, to this role or to this task phenomenally well so. Everyone was nailing it in this movie, I think, you know, absolutely crushing on the acting level. And I get what you're saying in terms of the ranking and stuff like that. It's really hard to do. But like, I at least can look at it in terms of like a great capper to what was a very, very rocky phase for me personally.
Yeah. As far as it being the close of phase 4, Does that track for you? Like, does it make sense that this is sort of like the end of something?
Does it make sense? Not really, but phase four didn't make sense. So in a really weird meta thematic way, yes.
Well, I mean, there is a degree to which, you know, WandaVision, what was that about, Kevin?
Oh, God, are we doing this whole grief thing?
You know, even Black Widow, the first movie of Phase 4 was, you know, something of a send-off to a character who wasn't going to be a part of this anymore.
Yeah. I mean, okay.
That's not super fun that, like, the theme of a full phase is like, well, we lost stuff. And some of it was actually real and bad and terrible. But it does feel like maybe that's the through line. And if that is the through line, this is the movie that, appropriately enough, I think, like, channeled that the best because there was something very, very real to grieve.
For sure. I don't know if that tracks with a lot of the other movies in a way, right? Like, I think certain movies and shows definitely talked about grief and moving on and path and that journey. But I don't know if they all fit there. It just truly is a weird one to end on because, like I said, this phase felt very meandery, and I don't think that's changed in any way.
Yeah.
I don't know what phase five, quote unquote, is going to be like. I love that Marvel is sort of hitting the, like, phases don't matter now that a phase didn't matter. It's a real interesting way to change your tune real quick in the middle of the song, but that's okay. But yeah, I guess, I don't know. We'll see. Just a weird goddamn spot in the MCU.
Yeah, but I think, like, to some degree, it makes sense. Endgame's such a hard act to follow, and the Infinity Saga just such a hard act to follow that there would be some degree of, like, I don't know, just make some movies, make some shows. I don't know. We'll say it's a phase. What do we do? Just stop saying phases. So, I don't know what that's going to look like going forward. But I think as far as, if you need to end things on something of an event, this was very eventful, you know, like,
yes,
this was, this, it definitely felt that way. And it introduced a lot of new elements to the world of the show, of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, rather, you know, just the introduction of Talokan and the fact that they're still out there, that there are, you know, the possibility of, like, other secret hidden societies, maybe, that could be existing within this world.
We have so many, Josh.
Yeah.
There's like 7 or 8 secret societies in the MCU right now.
Is this the best one, though?
Certainly the most interesting one.
It was cool. You know what? A thought that I did have, and you're going to get so mad at this, was watching the movie and during that whole scene where Namor is showing Shuri where he's from in his town,
uh-huh.
I was, like, secretly, quietly in the theater being like, God, unironically, I can't wait for Avatar: Way of the Water. Like, I'm so excited for some underwater James Cameron action.
I believe I actually turned to Mike Bloom during the bridge scene when they jump out, and I just, or maybe it was the ending, but I just said, man, Avatar 2 is looking great, because between the blue and the water and everything, it really felt that way.
It's going to be great. I can't wait. It's going to be really...
It's going to be great as a strong statement.
It's going to be great. It's going to be great. I'm unironically super, super excited for it. But no, I loved everything that was involving that. I thought this movie looked incredible. Thought a lot of the design work was just amazing. Namor's design is so good that they made,
fantastic,
like... They made, like, the green bathing suit totally work.
Oh, it works. It works.
The winged feet totally worked. Is he going to heal, by the way?
I think he will. I think that it is a thing, right? Like, usually when you have any sort of power, you somehow or another, accelerated healing is always incorporated. Even Daredevil has accelerated healing for whatever reason.
I would have to, like, sit down with the list, Kevin. But off the top of my head, I'm thinking about non-fatal injuries that characters in the MCU have sustained. And him getting one of his little wing feet ripped out felt so painful. Felt painful in this unbearable way.
Well, it's one of those things, too, where it's a minor injury that just looks like it's going to hurt bad and also feel like it's going to have lasting repercussions.
Yeah.
Because, like, it's like what they say, where it's like, if you lose your pinky toe, you can't walk properly. I think it's a similar thing. He can't fly properly without half of his wing gone, you know?
His flight was rendered so amazingly. I loved it.
He flitted around.
His physicality was incredible. Like, when he would emerge from the ocean and just, like, you know, kind of like Baywatch his hair back.
Yes.
Like, it was just so cool. He immediately felt like this really well-worn, really brilliantly realized character that I can't wait to figure out how they're gonna do more with him. Like, he does not seem like somebody who's gonna want to get involved in any kind of like top level conflicts. Like, is he gonna be involved in the Kang Dynasty at all? Secret Wars? I imagine probably, because he's such a breakout from this. But what that looks like, I don't know. I do now feel like
what it looks like, because they haven't given us an inkling of what the rest of it looks like.
I do now want the Submariner movie, for sure. But I think that there's some rights issues with that still.
Maybe
it's like Universal
also
has the rights to the movie or something like that.
Very bizarre.
Yeah,
and
I know.
But I don't know. Okay, here's the thing though. This movie especially, I always felt Namor is a strong supporting character. And this movie didn't really change my opinion. I love the character, but I just think he works better in context of other characters. When people take some of these characters like, we'll have you in your own movie, I don't know if it works as well. This is a Doctor Strange issue. I think, universally speaking, except for a few exceptions, like The Oath, I don't think Doctor Strange carries his own series well enough. And even when it comes to the movies, I think it's similar. I think he's a character that works really, really great as a supporting character. And he becomes difficult when you put him in his own film. So I don't want to ruin Namor by giving him his own movie because he was, like, popular. You
How
know?
About
it's a
this?
Dangerous road or dangerous waters to swim in.
What about a Werewolf by Night special presentation?
That could work.
Could
I think a one-shot I could be into. So you hit the extended 3 hours, you could get around to some issues.
3 hours of a Namor movie could be a lot. 3 hours of any movie could be a lot. 3 hours of Black Panther was almost a lot. I know the three of you were talking about you didn't feel the runtime, but I did because I was in Nightmare Theater. So
yeah, you
that
were
was
surrounded by screaming children. I feel like at that point you would feel the runtime.
That was difficult. To pivot away from Namor, I thought that when Shuri takes on the Black Panther mantle and has her own Black Panther costume, they nailed that design. I think that the new Black Panther suit looks awesome.
It's great. It's a really good combo between T'Challa's look and, I think, Killmonger's look while still making it her own, which
yes.
is really great.
Because it has, like, the gold accents of yes. Killmonger. There's still, like, sort of, like, the purple glowy T'Challa uh-huh. effects. But it's just, like, lithe and cool. And it was also very Shuri, because, like, her hands morph into, like, the sort of,
yep.
like, plasma cannon type stuff. She looked incredible as Black Panther. Thought that was awesome. I didn't love the Midnight Angel aesthetic, but I think that it was really funny that Okoye didn't either.
Yeah.
So that kind of worked for me.
Well, it's weird to be like, oh, the Midnight Angels, and they're also bright blue, which is
right.
like, that's not going to be a good look at midnight if you're trying to be stealth.
Yeah.
You know?
Midnight blue, I don't know. It's like from the Crayola crayon box. Isn't that a color?
I mean, it could be. Every color.
I loved the color.
Any strange combination of words could be a color in a Crayola box.
I loved the color. And then I like that that Riri Williams kind of looks like Samus Aran from Metroid.
Wow, yes.
Like that was,
you are so right.
That was sort of cool. What I maybe don't like so much is that she doesn't get to bring the suit into her new show. It felt like Shuri is saying to her at the end, like, listen, so you're going to get a Disney Plus show. That's the good news. The bad news is the Disney Plus show is not going to have a budget for your Wakandan armor.
Correct.
So we have to keep that.
We have
so
to keep that.
Good luck figuring
you're
that out.
You're going to have to do real old school again, style. I think that's 100% what it is. And it is weird. You are right.
I'm just giving you like my quick hits on my reactions to everything, because you all did such a great job of talking it through. Loved Riri Williams. Thought she was great. Dominique Thorne, really, really good. Was very confused about why she had to die, like, according to Namor. Like, I was a little bit lost in terms of her plot utility, and I do think, to the point you all made, like, a little MacGuffin-y
as a
character, and I just don't understand, like, why her death necessitated this huge conflict, or, like, the need to kill her necessitated this huge conflict.
Well, because they got the designs, and I think the idea is just, like, if we kill her, they likely won't be able to build another one if she's the only one who could do it.
Yeah, couldn't she just, like, keep her in Atlantis or whatever, or what's it called?
Talokan?
Like, can't you just keep her? Can't you just hang on to her?
That's
like,
called kidnapping, also illegal.
Better than death, I suppose, or I don't know.
What are you looking for, a fate worse than death? No, just death, isn't
yeah.
that enough?
But I loved her. I thought she was great. I am excited to see her in future projects, and a little curious about what Ironheart looks like. How much about Ironheart the show do you know about?
Nothing. You know I know. I try to keep avoiding
some stuff being reported around that show that has me very interested.
Interesting.
And that's the word I'll use.
Okay.
But I loved her. I thought that she was terrific. I don't know that I loved sort of her her being used kind of as this plot device in the movie, but I thought that Dominic Thorne as a performer brought it. And so I'm very excited that she got debuted in this huge way. And so you would imagine that there will be a lot of eyes on Ironheart if there weren't already going to be. So that's exciting. I'm looking forward to that for sure.
Yeah, I think they did a good job. And even, yes, while she is a MacGuffin, so often the MacGuffin in these types of things are just a... especially in movies with a male lead and, you know, there's if you're female or if your MacGuffin is a female, it's just she is the blank slate or sexy baby trope, right? And it's just there's nothing there.
There's a sexy baby trope?
Or I guess born yet. Well, first of all, there is a sexy baby trope. Taylor Swift just sang about this.
Oh, my gosh.
Check out Antihero. It's a great song. But... it's the born sexy yesterday is another name for stuff like that.
Okay.
But the idea is it's always just like she's very childlike, doesn't really have a personality besides being a fantasy for the male character, basically. And I like that at least Riri had a definitive personality and her own drive. She felt like a character.
Yeah.
And I think that's to the benefit of the film, you know, like was she MacGuffin? Yes. But at least it felt like there was depth to this MacGuffin, yeah. Which is a weird thing to say.
No, because I think that she really brought it in terms of performance. And I think that there was just... and I think that the way that she becomes somebody that Shuri can relate to so hard,
yes,
you know, as like fellow brilliant science mind, and like we can bond on this. And it's like the first person that she's able to see in the wake of her brother's death where she can have like any kind of like instant connection with... and like the connection that she has with Namor is a very different thing. And there really are people out there that are like shipping them hard, by the way. Is that real?
Dude, Raylo is a thing. Of course people are shipping anything. Come on.
Yeah. I'm glad that's not a thing.
You did not exist in the world of like live journal and anime music videos and Tumblr and stuff, right?
Because I mean,
like,
I existed in the time that this world
but
existed.
you weren't in that world.
Not really.
Yeah, let me tell you, dude. As a person who, especially in the anime realm, the way people ship characters is out of control. Characters who never meet in the series, people will write chapters of fan fiction about,
uh-huh,
because they're just like, I like both these characters and I want them to bone, even though they've never interacted in the actual show.
This is,
you can ship anything.
All right, let's get into some feedback, Kevin. A lot of people who loved this movie who had a lot to say. This is from another Josh. Another Josh said, I think they captured the world's shock and grief in that pre-credit scene perfectly. It was like a gut punch, and the audience was silent all throughout. Well, Josh, I'm glad they were for you.
Yeah, me too. Sorry, this Josh.
No, the everyone was well behaved at that point in the theater. And yeah, like the fact that they were going straight into it. It was one of those things that was... It was a really interesting bit of storytelling where obviously we know that her sort of like breakneck pace of like, I have to get this thing made to save my brother isn't going to work.
Right.
And so there's just this faded quality to that whole scene that really lent to this feeling of enormous tragedy. And this does not feel fair. And it was a really, really well done open to the movie. And even the fact that the Marvel Studios logo, all sound dropped out, all tribute to Chadwick. That was really, really, really well done, I thought. From Jim, the great Jim Fells, Jim writes in and says, the Ross and Fontaine storyline did mostly feel like setup for future movies. Did that end when she revealed what she knew that she had known all along about the beads? I didn't mind much because I like both actors, but I don't know that we needed it either. Do you feel like it lent anything to the movie to have these two characters so important in it?
I mean, so important is a stretch, but I again, Ross has a connection to these characters in this world more so than any other, I think, character that is available.
Is he related to General Thunderbolt Ross? Everett Ross.
Oh, wow. You know, I never thought about it, put that
together.
He's
going to ultimately have to be, right?
It's
all connected.
It's all connected. And, you know, we did lose William Hurt, so...
but we gained Harrison Ford.
Wait, is he taking over the... again, I know nothing of this
Kevin,
stuff, my man.
yes, if you are not aware, Harrison Ford has been cast to replace the late William Hurt as Thunderbolt Ross.
That is wild.
It's a strange way to get Harrison Ford into the Marvel Cinematic Universe,
extremely,
but here he is.
Extremely odd.
Yeah.
He's going to be a grumpy, grumpy man.
Well, that's General Ross.
Yeah. I guess it fits.
I think he might be Martin Freeman's dad, would be my guess.
Would be really interesting. I wouldn't hate that, especially seeing the contrast of those two characters. But I definitely get the idea that they feel like they didn't belong in the movie. I was okay with their presence, again, loving those two actors so much. I think Ross's connection made sense. I think it helped drive parts of the plot forward in terms of like how they would know information and how they would, because again, they are an isolated group and there's only so much you can find out. So having that connection makes sense. There is also the element now, if I want to go really, really meta, of can you make a Marvel movie and not have any white people in it? That might be another reason.
Yeah.
Which... can you? Yes. Would they? No. Because I think there's a lot of that, right? And that comes from just, I don't know, existing in this world and working in entertainment. But that could be another reason for their presence. But for me personally, I enjoyed their presence because I thought the actors were great. And the way they fit into the movie did make sense to me. I just don't see it as... oh, they are set up for future films. Their presence in the story all tracked within the story itself. You don't need to know what comes next or what else happened or what how they... like. There was nothing in what they said to make it feel like that. Because I think people are maybe being too cavalier with that usage here. Because usually when it's a setup for another movie, you have to have something that actually says something, right? Like oh, well, activate Operation Thunderbolts. Like, that's a setup for a movie that has no context or makes no sense in this film. Everything that happened makes sense in the context of this film. So I don't really see it as a setup for future films. Like, that's such a very specific thing. And I don't think that's what that was here, personally.
Yeah, I think maybe like a little bit of like the purple-haired Julia Louis-Dreyfus showing up here was like, that is so specific and is so like such a different vibe than the rest of this movie that I think, especially because I was already sort of like leaning towards being a grumpy Gus while watching the movie.
You leave my dog out of this.
I'm sorry. I did not mean to evoke your dog. He's never grumpy. So like, and that's the kind of thing. Like I felt like... it almost like odd critique, like her scenes felt almost like a little like it was like having like the Baroness from G.I. Joe show up all of a sudden, you know?
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, again, it's we know that she is involved in other stuff. But if we had not known that, it wouldn't have been that effect in this movie.
Yeah,
because she would have just been another person who showed up and played a role, and she was Everett's boss, and we've seen that sort of thing many times before.
Everett's boss, yeah. Everett's Ross boss. Okay, some more feedback from Felipe. Felipe said, I love that this movie not only is a love letter to Chadwick, but a love letter to black women. Not only that, but it feels like it's Marvel's first project to have an amazing and complex arc for more than one woman, let alone multiple. Ryan Coogler really had an unenviable challenge, and he left no crumbs. I hope this was a healing and powerful way to channel his grief. Yet the women of this movie, I mean, this movie is about the women of this movie in a hugely major way. And like, you know, take your pick. I mean, Felipe does go on to mention, like, the only knock I have against the movie is, like, maybe they just sort of abandon Okoye at a certain point. And it did feel that way to me to a certain degree, that she just gets fired and then we don't have her in the movie for a while anymore. And that felt like a bummer to me. But her storyline was really powerful as well. Nakia's story is really powerful.
Man. Like, that fight on the bridge, I've actually also been thinking about a lot. And it's so intense. It's a fight that what's weird... and interesting about this film especially is because there is such an ensemble cast and every piece of the cast feels important, and these were a lot of characters who were the secondary characters in the previous movie. There is a level of stakes that exist for these characters. I legit thought Okoye might die on that bridge.
Yeah.
Or someone could have died on that bridge. And I think that's a great thing to have in a movie like this, because usually you don't feel those stakes in Marvel movies. But I felt it here, and I think that is a credit to, again, making all these powerful women the center of the story, but on such an equal playing field that any one of them could have went. And certainly we did lose one in this, right? We lost Angela Bassett. We lost the Queen.
I hate it.
So, but
I'm
it
so
makes,
mad about it.
But it
I get
sense.
It.
Sense. Like,
totally,
and
it does.
And so all of that does really work. It's also, and people much smarter than me have articles about this, so I encourage you to look it up. But it's a movie that really also centers Black women and Latinx characters in a way that other films don't, that we don't get to see. And I think that's so well done. And it's not, you know, because usually we get to see this stuff in the, it's not even centered on them. They are the you know, cloud or electrons floating around the nucleus of the white story
right.
at its heart. And so I think it's really great to see this too, where it is such a movie centered on Black women and Latinx characters. And just like, it's a story about people of color. And I think it works really, really well on that, because it's a story about them and not the ultimately the white character. So
yeah.
That's another level of it that's really deep that I really love.
You mentioned the bridge scene. Deshaun had a question about this. Is it explained how the Talokanians seemed invincible on the bridge scene, but then towards the end of the movie they're just getting dispatched?
Two Talokanians specifically,
yeah.
I think are the beast mode, right?
Namora and what's the other guy?
Atuma.
Yeah.
So like,
are they both comic book characters? Namora is a comic book character.
Atuma
for sure.
is also a comic
okay,
character.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
Yeah, they're beast mode characters, right? And like, they have high resilience, and I think, I don't know if it's they got dispatched easy by the end. Certainly when they're fighting against characters who have the juiced up armor, yes, and a lot of the other characters like M'Baku has like now a vibranium, you know, mace. So I think that lends a bit of an upper hand there. But yeah, I mean, I'd have to rewatch, but I don't think they really do get dispatched pretty easy. The Quantans don't do great.
No, they're about to get thrown off the boat by the end. Like, I almost feel like when Shuri and Namor get there at the end of the movie, that Namor, who has conceded, should like be looking at and be like, I revoke my concession.
Yeah. Actually, I changed my mind.
And we're doing pretty well. We're doing much better than I thought we were doing. Torby loved the movie, of course. Wow, what an experience that film was. And the cold open was way more visceral than I could have anticipated. I don't think I could properly put into words all the emotions of the experience at this time. A little more detailed than that in terms of like pulling out a specific take that he had. He was really curious, Torby was, about the apparent setup of M'Baku as the new king of Wakanda, or at least like the king regent of Wakanda. I really do want to live in the world where we get to see like King M'Baku. Now that's either a show or a special presentation or a Black Panther 3 that I would be thrilled to check. I thought that the way that M'Baku like in the first movie is like a great comic character, like a great like comedic relief, I think, in a lot of ways. There's some, you know, emotionally surprising things about him in that movie as well, but I think by and large when I think about him in that movie, I think about how much he makes me laugh once T'Challa seeks out his help specifically. In this movie, I feel like they really showed like this like softer, wiser side of him that was really cool. I thought M'Baku was a real highlight of the film.
It's called Character Journey.
Yeah.
I think they did a good job.
We were on it.
Yeah, of making him this advisor. And I think there's a level of, can Shuri rule at this particular moment? That is a question that I don't know yet, because she is young. She has not had the experience, and certainly, I think it's something she needs to learn, right? M'Baku has led his people. Could the M'Baku from the first Black Panther lead them in the right way? No. Could this M'Baku? Quite possibly, yes. And I think there is a substantial difference, too, between being the ruler and the leader and the king versus its protector, which are two very different roles. And I think those two can work hand in hand together, which is a journey I really like and something I would love to see as well.
Yeah.
But
now, if I'm
going to
start up a live journal, Kevin, for some shipping purposes, perhaps it would be M'Baku and Shuri that I'd be shipping.
I would wonder about the ages of these characters, but
I suppose I don't know the answer to that question.
Yeah, that's the hard part, because I think Shuri's pretty young. But other than that,
I feel like they'd be good for each other.
Yeah. I don't think there's a power difference or not power difference. What's the word I'm looking for? The dynamic where he is a higher, you know, administrator, authority imbalance. Thank you. There it is. Jesus. Between the Black Panther and the king / queen, right? I think those levels are pretty equal. So it's not, I think it passed that test.
Sure.
At least.
Yeah.
That test.
But I like him being in this role by the end of the movie, because I feel like he, I think that for a couple of reasons. One, I like it because he throughout the movie very clearly has like different opinions from her and states them, and then she like shuts that down and she has her own thing and she has to kind of get to where he's at on her own. But she, you know, will say what she wants to do, and then he's like, all right, you're the boss. Like, yeah. I'll do what you want. So I think like there is a way where like so this is like my consideration of it as like for the health of Wakanda, right? So for the health of Wakanda, I think that the M'Baku that we are left with in this movie is going to like be leading Wakanda in the spirit of what would Shuri want? You know, like what does she want to do? What would honor her family and what do these people need in the spirit of that? I feel like we're left with a character who's down to do that. And I think that that's great. And then the other piece of it is like, I think I want Shuri to hang out on Haiti for a little while, right? Like, I want her to process the thing that she refused to process. She needs to heal. It's, like, enough that she's Black Panther now. Like, to be Black Panther, to be queen, and then to process, like, the double whammy of losing her brother unfairly and her mother unfairly. Like, she needs to, like, get to know her nephew.
You know,
like, she needs some time away, I feel like.
It's interesting, too, because now this could be misremembering and, like, obviously things change and all that jazz. But part of me sort of remembers the part of the original plan of Black Panther 2 being that T'Challa was gone for 5 years and that M'Baku actually had taken over as ruler of Wakanda in his absence. And then he would come back and what would that, you know, conflict or struggle be like? We sort of are in that spot now where M'Baku is possibly becoming the ruler of Wakanda. And that could, even though they get along, lead to some conflict between the way Shuri, the Black Panther, wants to do things, and M'Baku, the ruler of Wakanda, wants to do things, which could make for an interesting story. So it is interesting if they found a way to make this movie that is about the passing of Black Panther as a stopgap to the broader story that we're going to tell. So that's interesting. And again, I don't know how much I'm remembering or misremembering here, but that is an interesting setup for a future film. I don't want them to be in hyper-conflict because I love both these characters so much, but... yeah, it could make for a good story, though.
Yes. We got this sent our way from Nat, who really just wanted to give shouts to you and Sasha and Jason for the podcast last week. So this is from Nat. Loved it, loved it, loved it. Kevin, Sasha, Jason, you guys got it in the bag. You actually talked about Shuri being the Black Panther and what that entails in the story and that she does not need a love interest. I love the discussion about colonization and the divide and conquer methods to exploit and get natural resources. Hands down, the best podcast coverage of this movie.
Woo-hoo!
And Nat says, for a blurred like me, I was very happy with the discussion. Keep them coming. So shouts from Nat to the three
of
you. Co-signed. It was really fun listening to the three of you talk about the podcast. I was a little alarmed that apparently I had been imprisoned, but I am now no longer imprisoned.
Well, that's the best way to imprison someone and have them not realize they're
imprisoned. You call for them and you toss them in the van. And then let's throw it to Mike Bloom at the end here. Mike says, I think this was the perfect way to end phase four. After Endgame, there's been a lot of talk about where the MCU goes from here, and the results have probably been the most mixed since back in phase two, but I think this movie perfectly represents how to move on from big losses, giving focus to characters old and new, and looking ahead to a brighter future. So that is from occasional Everything is Super contributor here, Mike Bloom, your The Boys podcast co-host and your movie date at
Indeed.
Black Panther.
We had a wonderful, wonderful time
Any
together.
Fun stories from seeing this movie with Mike Bloom?
We had a great time together. When we got there, they were giving out popcorn and free drinks and cookies, and we were really excited about the cookies.
Mm-hmm.
But then someone said, be careful with them. We ordered the wrong dye. This will stay in your mouth for like 2 days.
And oh my
so
gosh.
I was like, oh. So I didn't eat the cookie. I went home and like scraped the frosting off.
Yeah.
So that way I wouldn't have that. The rest of the cookie, delicious.
So you brought the free cookies home.
Yes.
You scraped the frosting off the cookies that were going to dye your mouth for multiple days at a
Correct.
Time. And then you consumed the cookie. And did you have any residual dyes?
No. No, which was great.
Now, if you couldn't have scraped the frosting off for whatever reason,
would I have eaten the cookie?
Yes.
So that was the same weekend as my birthday. And while I didn't end up doing anything because of other reasons, I wouldn't have wanted to have a dyed mouth for my birthday. So
sure.
I would have avoided.
Okay.
Another time? Maybe. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Fair
enough. Take the hit.
By and large, so much of the rest of the feedback is just loved the movie, loved the movie. Jess Sterling loved the movie. Will loved the movie. So many people just adored this movie. And I'm really glad that we have like a movie in the MCU that is like widely loved and widely revered and an important one.
You know,
what's
funny
mattered.
Is that we just haven't had this in a long time.
That's the
I
thing.
I don't think we've had a people being like, this movie's great, because people usually will be like, this is the worst movie I've ever seen in the history of movies. What?
There were ways in which it just felt, it felt so sad, and like I was just so incensed for some of it. And I think that was a fair feeling to have, but it also felt, I don't know, it just felt very moving and big, you know, it felt like a big movie.
Yeah, for sure.
It was like small. It was a small story in a lot of ways. And yet it just felt like, it felt like capital I important, this film. That was cool. You don't get that a lot with Marvel right now.
Because I feel like a lot of it is just, again, like could feel like setup or feel meandering. But I think they told a really big story in their own movie, and it felt like its own thing. And I really like that fact about it. I think it's a thing Phase 4 really should have picked one or the other, and they didn't decide. And sometimes that worked to the benefit, and other times it didn't.
So that is the feedback from Wakanda Forever. Any final Wakanda Forever thoughts that you have, Kevin? Last takes.
I don't think I have any other takes that I've said from the first one or this one at this point. I mean, it's truly fantastic. I can't wait to watch it again. I ultimately, at the end of the day, of course, I think I agree. Like, there is such a gap missing with Chadwick Boseman not being a part of it and not being there as a Black Panther. But in terms of how to progress things, I think they did a really, really good job. I think the real lesson here, as I have said, I think even in Black Panther and when the passing happened and we covered it, is just we need more characters of color, because what makes it an issue is when this stuff happens, it's just the one, and when that's really gone. Like, and I know we have Falcon as Captain America, sort of, and we have Rhodey, sort of, but T'Challa felt like the first main character, capital MC, in the Marvel Universe that was that. And so we need more of that. And I know they're trying with Captain America, but they're not there yet. And I think they just need to work at that. And I think that's on multiple levels. I mean, there are, you know, Namor is great, but I think, again, like, we are in a situation where, for me personally, I think he can just carry a movie by himself.
I don't know. I saw him lift a ship at one point. It feels like he could carry a lot of things. Yeah.
But yeah, I would just love more of that. I just think we need a level of diversity that's important, and also have them told by other voices as well, I think is important. So there's a lot of reasons why this movie is important. So I think my takeaway at the end is part of the power of this movie is that it was also Black told, and I feel like carrying that through could be great.
I know a lot of people left this movie so impressed with Ryan Coogler, and like wanting Ryan Coogler to be the guy to step in for Avengers Secret Wars, like who's going to take that on and everything. And he's clearly demonstrated himself to be such an incredible filmmaker that I also would love to see that. I've seen a couple of interviews where he's been like, I put it all out there. Like, this is, I put everything that I've got into this movie. Yeah. And I would totally understand if it's like, I rose to one of the most monumental challenges you could possibly think of, was making a movie of this level of attention with this amount of money that is invested in it, and people's expectations wrapped up in it, in the wake of the passing of like not just like a creative partner, an essential creative partner, but also just like an incredible friend and such an important person, that if he doesn't want to do this anymore, like, I would get that for sure.
Totally understand. I think respect the wishes of the creator as well. And I honestly think I love Ryan Coogler, but I don't know if he should tackle an Avengers movie. Not because he can't, but because I think when movies like this are told, it's because it was... It's weird to be like, because it's also Chadwick Boseman's passing, but I think there's a level of hands-offness from Marvel that you do not get when an Avengers level movie.
Yeah.
And I think circling those squares can become very difficult no matter how good of a director you are. And I don't know if I want to, one, put him in that situation, and two, if it makes sense for him to work in that sort of situation. So yes, I think he would be great, but I don't know if he'd be able to tell this type of story he'd even want to tell for an Avengers movie for Secret Wars. So for me, I mean, I get it, right? Like, you see something so good, but it's really, really hard to pull that off.
Yeah. What I do want is I feel like this movie, in bringing Killmonger back in the way that they did, like, there's totally a path for him to, like, escape the ancestral plane, I feel like.
It's comics, right? There's a way you can,
like,
I feel
like, you know, the really low-hanging fruit would have been, like, okay, we found a way to bring him in, and now, like, act three, he's the bad guy of this movie.
Good God, yeah.
And he kind of was, in a way, right? Like, he's, like,
his presence was.
He sort of, like, hijacks Shuri's, like, to a certain extent. But, like, that was, like, sort of, like, the artful, delicate way of doing that and, like, still honoring Killmonger and his entire journey in the first movie. But yeah, like, now, like, I do think, like, the comic booky door is kicked down for, like, I've got a way out of here, like, the door's been open to me, and he could, like, somehow find his way out. I do think I kind of want to see that.
I mean, look,
he was so cool in his one scene.
Oh,
it was,
yeah,
such a good scene.
Yeah, he's my favorite villain, as mentioned, I think, in the MCU, so
yeah.
I would love to see more of him. But he's also another one that's hard to make sure you do him right in the future. It's a really specific type of character. But also, Magneto's coming, so he sort of fills that niche as well.
So let's talk about some stuff that's happening aside from Black Panther.
There's a lot going on.
So we've said that we're going to do the DC movies as our next focus here on Everything is Super, and that is true. But we are getting this sort of, like, is this phase four? Is this phase five? Like, is this somewhere in between? It kind of doesn't matter. The Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special is just around the corner. And I think you and I want to talk about that. So we'll do that as a podcast coming up next week.
What a bonkers thing.
It's going to be wild. I can't wait. Kevin Bacon's a part of it. Like, the whole thing's gonna be really,
Kevin
really super.
Bacon's a part of
it. It's gonna be super fun. I'm really excited to get into that. So we're gonna do that as a podcast. Of course, since last we talked about DC, when we did our Black Adam podcast, James Gunn has been, and you've been wanting this for a while, Kevin.
It's crazy, because I think that I said this during our podcasting about the Suicide Squad, or Peacemaker, I think it was.
Yes.
Just give the DC universe to James Gunn. And here we
are.
And
it's basically happened.
The monkey's paw has curled in a way that might be good.
Yeah, so since last we spoke, James Gunn and Peter Safran are co-CEOs of DC Studios. So the two of them are going to be taking this thing together. And they've been partners, I think, on a lot of things for quite some time. And so the two of them are going to be running DC together. That's very fun. Apparently, they have, like, a big war plan of what the movies are going to look like that is not going to be revealed to us anytime soon, but it's going to be revealed to the shareholders, who matter more than we do, ultimately, Kevin, I suppose. They probably should know what's going on before we do.
Probably.
I'm just very excited about this.
I'm extremely excited. I'm also... I have a lot of trepidation just because of literally what I just said about Ryan Coogler.
Yes.
I think James Gunn has done a lot in terms of handling the Marvel of it all, clearly, right? And, like, a lot of what he does in Guardians is different than, like, this types of story being told compared to Black Panther, for sure. However, DC is insane.
Uh-huh.
We know that the people currently in charge of Warner Brothers are insane. And I am a little concerned about him being able to really do the type of stuff that he wants to do, him and Peter. I hope they do. I hope that the people at Warner Brothers have realized we need to just give this person and let them do their thing and hope it works, because they have tried it the other way where they put their grubby, slimy hands all over things and it doesn't work. So that's my hope.
Where did the slime come from, by the way?
The
river flowing underneath New York.
Yeah, you haven't worked for them, but, like, it's like it leaks from the walls. It's so weird. It's odd. You just put your hand on something, you're like, oh God, where did the slime come from?
That's so gross.
But I'm excited about the possibilities, right? Like, these are, I think James Gunn especially is someone who loves comic books, clearly, has a deep wealth of knowledge. He was really interested in telling these emotional stories, I think, done in a right way with these types of characters. And I'm really hoping he gets to do that, especially with the characters I really like. I was already excited about a potential Superman movie with Henry Cavill having more say, because he is also a giant effing nerd and clearly loved Superman in a way that he was not allowed to express.
Henry
in his
Cavill
movies.
Hadn't left The Witcher the last time we spoke.
He's also now left The Witcher.
But speaking of the monkey's paw.
Listen, this is the thing. I would feel so bad if this man left The Witcher to come to do a Superman movie and he still didn't get it. Like, Oh my God, that's so upsetting.
I think the Witcher thing is its whole other deal, but yeah, that's a problem. That's tough.
It's a tough situation. So I'm really hoping that between Henry Cavill's having a higher say and James Gunn involved, I'm going to get like a cool Superman story.
Yeah.
I don't think James Gunn is going to F around with the Batman too much. I think he is also a director who understands the ability for letting a director with a vision do a thing, because that is literally
He also might be the one who can like finally knock some sense into the powers that be and be like, the world can accommodate multiple Batman. Like,
yeah.
We could probably handle the fact that there's a Robert Pattinson Batman and there's a Ben Affleck Batman or whatever. And I think that he actually would be the guy to invigorate the Ben Affleck Batman. I think James Gunn could do that. And I think that that'd be super fun.
I think so. Again, I
guess we'll talk about that in a few weeks. Yeah.
We will, for sure.
But yeah, so there's just a lot going on in the James Gunn neck of the woods specifically. And Kevin Feige's response to the whole thing has been very classy, but also funny, where he's like, I will be the first person in line. I was the first person he talked to. I'm so psyched for him. He's got a lot of work to do before he can fully peace out. So we'll get to see what the first bit of that work looks like with the holiday special coming up, and then GOTG 3, which Gunn has been saying recently, like, Rocket Raccoon is my favorite character that I've ever written, and I have to finish his story, is sort of like his impetus for why he had to make this movie. So
R.I.P. to Rocket.
It feels like it does feel like preemptively we should start bracing ourselves for that being a possibility. So that was one thing that happened since last we spoke. You talk about sort of like the messiness of Marvel. Some of the messiness includes the fact that I guess the Blade movie is a little bit in trouble.
Yeah.
It seems like that there was there's the Blade reboot that's coming out pretty soon that was gearing up to film. Mahershala Ali is the star. He is going to be Blade. And then the director walked out because apparently like the script wasn't bad. And was it like that he walked out or was he fired? Like, I think that there were some conflicting reports about all of that, but it's been pushed. And that's not great if you're especially like hoping that this is around the time that like the phasing of it all is going to be like straightened out a little bit more. Like, that could be like a strange sort of wrinkle in the mix, but
just release the original Blade to theaters and don't say anything.
Would be a hilarious thing. Or hire Wesley Snipes to direct your Blade movie. would also have been a move that would have been fun. Wesley Snipes as Whistler would have been cool.
It would have been wild. I can't imagine a world where Wesley Snipes come back for Blade, especially after what happened with Blade 3.
But there's also all sorts of other wonky things that are happening with Marvel right now. And like the biggest one that has happened in the last couple of months that if you and I had the bandwidth, I think we would have done as its own like special breaking news podcast once the news hit, is the announcement that Hugh Jackman is returning as Wolverine
for
in
Deadpool
the Deadpool
3.
Movie.
It's a double whammy. It's a confirmation that Deadpool 3 is happening and that Hugh Jackman is going to return as Wolverine.
Yes.
Him and the way it was announced with Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman in their online video, A+,
yes,
they're doing social media right. It is very Deadpool. It is absolutely brilliant. So, like, all of that, I think, was so, so well done. What this movie is going to be, oh, boy.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's a lot of theory that it could be.
If they don't put this man in yellow spandex, I'm going to freak out.
They have to.
I'm going
to
lose my mind. I'm gonna get on that episode of the podcast and I'm just gonna scream for 90 minutes straight.
I feel like, look, here's the thing. I feel like they're going to. If this was a Fox movie still, not a chance. The fact that this is Ryan Reynolds, I think, having sway, one. Two, that it is
if Sway
Marvel
is in Deadpool 3, I'm going to be so hyped. Love Sway.
It's
great to see him.
I have a lot of high hopes that this is going to be very fun, because I also feel like this could very well be Deadpool kills the Fox universe.
Uh-huh.
And like, I feel like they have an opportunity to bring back a lot of people who are in the various Fox movies and just have Deadpool murder them or have them get killed.
Right.
And I think that could be great to like head into the next step for mutants, especially in the MCU. I think it's a great setup. I think it could be a lot of fun. I really enjoyed the first two Deadpool movies. I am not tired of Ryan Reynolds. I know some people are. I'm not. I'm still all in. So I would be interested to see that. And it's so funny to have Hugh Jackman just be like, yeah, why not? Like,
yeah,
a guy who's just like, I'm not doing this anymore, just be like, oh, whatever.
I think, I would really enjoy it if this was sort of like the litigation of the 20th Century Fox side of Marvel. Not just the X-Men, but like this is totally the movie to have, like, not only bring Chris Evans back as the Human Torch, but maybe make him the bad guy.
Oh,
you know,
my God,
like,
yeah.
Would just be absolutely incredible. Like the like
who's
the,
this Captain America looking motherfucker?
You know, like the Fox Fantastic Four literally having to like fight for their lives would just be wild and incredible. So I'm very excited about what it means.
Nick Cage's Ghost Rider.
You know, like I know that's Sony, but that would also be the thing
was
to bring
Sony?
In.
Oh, that Sony? I can't even keep track anymore.
Was it?
No. Universal? No, I think it might have been Fox.
No, I think that it was Sony. Let's just do a quick
Ghost look here.
Rider, Sony. Yeah, it was a Sony movie.
Okay,
Sony
boo.
But still, it'd be fun. So I look forward to it. This makes it very difficult, and you'll probably be thrilled about this, I'm sure, Kevin, as somebody who is a little anti-Wolverine. This makes it a really hard task for whoever is the next Wolverine to the point that I don't know that there should be. My feeling right this second is like, you know what? If Hugh Jackman has just expressed willingness to continue to be Wolverine, just let him have it. Just let him do it. With the evolution of technology stuff, he's in his early 50s. You could age him down, and like 10 years from now, you'll have that technology to a place where it will look totally fine. Like, just let the man be Wolverine forever. It's fine. He's so iconic, and if he wants to just keep doing it, whatever. So he's not short. Oh, no.
Well, neither is Wolverine anymore, you know? In the comics, but I think a solve is just don't have Wolverine be present for the first film at the very least.
Well, that's about to happen, though.
Well, Deadpool doesn't count.
This is the first MCU X-Men movie.
It's the first MCU Deadpool movie.
It's the first MCU mutant movie, and it's a Wolverine movie.
Well, Deadpool is not a mutant.
Mutant-ish.
And so, like, technically, we had an X-Men. We had the X-Men Doctor Strange. So,
and even
you know,
more, and even more technically, the first mutant Marvel Cinematic Universe project was Ms. Marvel. So,
well, yes, that's also true. Yes. She has been revealed as a mutant, and Namor is a mutant.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to keep using that word to oblivion.
They're mutants.
Yeah.
It works, it counts.
Sure.
But I'm here for Hugh Jackman. I was so excited, and I love that he, like, he was getting a little bit of shit from even James Mangold, I think, who's like, but I killed you.
Yeah.
But you died. This shouldn't be a thing.
I don't think you understand how the multiverse works,
and
my man.
And it's like, listen, this doesn't take away from the power of Logan. Like, I mean, I guess if you let it take away the power of Logan, that's...
It doesn't.
It doesn't. The movie exists.
You can still watch Logan as it is. It's fine. Good
yeah.
God.
I do kind of feel like Hugh Jackman is just like addicted to like becoming Wolverine and like the physical process of like,
oh God,
it's been too long since I've deprived myself of anything but chicken and broccoli and gym, and I just need to get back into the shape. I don't know why that's my Hugh Jackman.
For too
voice.
Long, I have been Hugh Jackman. I now need to be Huge Jacked Man once
yeah,
more.
Huge Jacked Man. So whatever, that's really fun, and like the comedy was very clear in that announcement video, so I'm pretty excited about it. And especially with Secret Wars on the horizon, it does now feel to me, Kevin, that they're gonna back up the money trucks for like as many of these types of people as possible. I feel like you'll get Patrick Stewart Secret Wars. I think that you'll get, God willing, that they're all still around and able to do this, like Ian McKellen Magneto. Like, I think that these will be the things that like they could say goodbye to this era of the X-Men in sort of like a way that is a little bit more of a celebration than what we got. Because as much as some of those X-Men movies totally suck and aren't that good, a lot of what was going on in those movies were very interesting, and some of it was really good, and most of that was casting. So like, do right by those actors before you usher in your next, especially if like contracts are an issue right now. Like, bring me Halle Berry back as Storm. Bring me James Marsden back as Cyclops.
Bring me James
and
Marsden,
give them one final, like, unambiguously, like, great X-Men sequence, you know? Like, have them go up against Kang or whoever they're going to have to fight would be awesome. So Hugh Jackman coming back kind of, like, doesn't, like, fully kick the door down on that stuff, but it makes me feel like that might be the direction this is going in, and it has me really excited. It also makes me excited about the possibility of, what if Wolverine and Hugh Jackman's Wolverine specifically exists in the same universe that Patrick Stewart's animated X-Men version of Professor X exists in? Like, does that, like, do the Fantastic Four, like the Krasinski Fantastic Four and Hugh Jackman's Wolverine, like, do they exist in the same universe? Could we see some, like, fulfillment of Multiverse of Madness and Deadpool kind of gets caught in the middle of, like, that specific universe? There's a lot of, like, fun stuff to speculate on with the Deadpool announcement that I'm pretty hyped about.
Yeah, for sure. My question just becomes timing too. Like, when is this movie gonna come out? how does it fit in? Because, like, there's a high possibility this movie doesn't come out until after Secret Wars. Like, maybe this movie is concurrent with Secret Wars. Who the hell knows? I'm really excited about it, though, because I just feel like this is a weird part. And I know, like, expectations, we should set them properly. And certainly we set them right for Black Adam. That worked out in our favor.
Yeah.
But, like, I was so excited about what Multiverse of Madness could have been, especially coming off of Everything Everywhere All at Once, which is what I feel like is what Doctor Strange should have been. So I have expectations of what Secret Wars could be. I have expectations of what Deadpool 3 could be. And it gets me really more excited about those films than what has come so much in the MCU currently. And I don't want to be like, yeah, just give me more of that nostalgia, just shove it down my throat, you know? But, like, I don't know. That's where I am until you can prove that you can do the other stuff just as well.
Sure, sure. Fair enough. I'm excited. I'm pretty pumped about it. I think it's going to be really fun. That news was electric
when
it came out. So we had to spend at least a little bit of time
on
that.
And their entire follow-up about answering questions, and then we got to hear none of the answers. Mm-hmm. A+.
Yeah, I mean, if you haven't seen that one, yeah, they sit down on the couch and they talk about, like, what the movie's going to be, but then all the sound drops out, and it's just Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go. They're just fighting, and whatever they're pantomiming looks like a hell of a movie.
It's incredible. I'm really, they're doing social media right, which is, I think, so important.
Should be good. Anything else Marvel-wise? I mean, I guess the next real stop after Guardians of the Galaxy is going to be Ant-Man and the Wasp. Quantumania.
Yes.
The trailer came out. Looks really great. I know you didn't watch the trailer, but
I did not.
Trailer's really cool.
I do have something to talk about here, actually, real quick.
Okay.
So this is really funny because Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, this ties into Black Panther. I think I mentioned that I thought Reed Richards was going to show up in Black Panther.
Yeah.
I thought that was who it was going to be. And a big reason, too, is going into Quantumania, they have said that William Jackson Harper has been added to the cast, which is, I'm ready for a boner situation because, like, the Marvel's not effing stupid. I think they're really aware of, like, that conversation and talk. Do I think he's going to be Mr. Fantastic in my dreams? Yes. In actuality, probably not. I'm expecting a boner. However,
Without context
is great.
Yeah.
So I have a conspiracy theory to share.
Yeah.
And it's about the Reed Richards casting.
Okay. Now, let's just be clear that I recently appeared, or I guess relatively recently, on an Everything is Super podcast episode where I screamed about how I'm done with this. So this better be a hell of a theory, Kevin, because I'm about to lose my mind.
It's a weird theory.
Okay,
here we go. So here's how this came about. Months ago, there was a rumor speculating that Marvel had met with an actor and that he was in the running to play Mr. Fantastic. This actor was Penn Badgley. And there was a lot of conversation about Penn Badgley possibly being Mr. Fantastic. The response was mixed, to say the least.
Yes.
Because it seems like a really
You like
safe
Penn
cast.
Badgley?
I don't really know him.
Yeah. Did you see You?
I did not, but I know of You.
Were you a Gossip Girl guy?
No.
Okay.
So out of my realm, which actually lends into my conspiracy.
Gossip Girl's kind of in your realm.
True. There's a specific type of, like, white people show I watch.
Yeah, this
Gossip
but I
Girl,
feel like this is one of those white people show that you would
it's,
watch.
It's too much because it's too, like, it's too rich white people.
Okay,
and
fair.
That crosses my line, right? Like, it's a very specific.
It's a class issue.
Yeah, it's a class issue. Uh-huh. So, Penn Badgley, though, I know a lot of people like him. I have not interacted with any of his content previously, but this lends credence to my conspiracy theory.
Okay.
What I have noticed happening within the last month or so, month and a half, I'm very, very active on TikTok.
I know, TikTok. I've seen this. It infuriates me because I've seen you on TikTok before, just like dutifully staring at your phone for about an hour and a half straight looking at TikTok.
Yes.
And then I'll send you a text message and I won't hear from you for 3 days.
Nothing, yeah. Because I'm too busy looking at TikTok.
Yeah, it's infuriating, yes.
However, I have noticed Penn Badgley has a TikTok now. Penn Badgley shows up in my feed a lot.
Okay.
And as a person who works in this, it is interesting when you get served regular content by a person that you would sometimes swipe away from or don't follow or whatever. It means that his content is being pushed to a lot of people.
Uh-huh.
I've interacted with other people, including my wife and one of our friends who have also been searched Penn Badgley content.
Okay.
He's doing great on TikTok. He's getting a lot of views. His videos are indeed funny. He's doing phenomenal. However, it is raising his awareness in the public consciousness in a way that I find very, very
sus.
Interesting.
Okay.
So my conspiracy theory is that he has indeed been cast as Mr. Fantastic, and Marvel is working
that Disney is pouring TikTok money
through social media to raise his awareness among a younger crowd.
Wow.
To drum up excitement for him being played or cast as Reed Richards, or at the very least in I think the Fantastic Four. I think he's going to show. He might be Doctor Doom.
If it's not going to be Reed Richards, then let me just be the one who does the low hanging fruit of TikToker Doom.
TikToker Doom.
Yeah.
But that's my conspiracy theory. I think he is in fact cast in one of these movies in a prominent role, and they are working overtime to get you excited about this casting via social media.
This is a little bit Charlie Day whiteboard of you, I feel like.
Maybe, but as a person who works in the,
you literally just like shifted your position right now, and you look like a maniac.
I am. I'm ready to go. Like.
Where's
like
my phone?
Wall.
I gotta take a picture. I've got it right now.
Oh, my God.
This is just for my personal. Hold on. Yeah, hold that pose. Wow. If you're a patron of Post Show Recaps, we'll put that in the Discord in the Everything is Super
but
podcast.
But yeah, conspiracy
channel.
Theory probably. But if it pans out, I'm gonna be thrilled. Because again, like, this feels exactly like the type of stuff you do on social and in entertainment to get things running.
If Penn Badgley is in Fantastic Four, I'm just going to choose to believe that it is for the exact reasons that you described, and I'm going to forever look at you as a true super genius.
Yeah.
You are the Reed Richards of the Everything is Super podcast.
You have to think.
Well, I'm definitely the Ben Grimm because I am the Jewish one.
You have to think like an evil genius, yes. And sometimes that works out in your favor, and that's what I try to do half the time.
Very fun. Kevin, anything else before? Before we sign, there's a lot going on. Obviously, we only have so much time that we can get into everything. If people want to get us talking about other Marvel stuff other than just the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special next week, they could certainly write in with some topic suggestions or any reactions to anything we said on this episode of the podcast, super@postshowrecaps.com. That's super@postshowrecaps.com. If you want to email us, we'll talk about whatever you want us to talk about as we talk about the holiday special and start gearing up for our DCEU project coming up here on Everything is Super. But other than that, Kevin, is there anything off the top of your mind?
Man, I don't even know what's going on beyond that, right? Like, I'm really pumped about possible futures here.
Yeah,
the multiverse is open. Let's see if we can venture into some good shit.
Okay, cool, fun stuff. You can find Kevin on the internet wherever you can find him, at Kev Mahadeo. You can find him here on Post Show Recaps talking about the Mighty Ducks Game Changers alongside the great Melissa Woodward, who you are also co-hosting alongside Adam H, who you could be hearing on the Cabinet of Curiosities and Mystic Quest podcast. Is it Mythic Quest? Mythic Quest.
Mythic Quest
podcast with Jess Sterling. The three of you, Adam H, Melissa, and yourself are talking about Doctor Who.
That is correct.
In the Whoway patron-only podcast, which you can listen to at any level, patreon.com/postshowrecaps. You having fun with the Doctor Who?
Having a blast. We're about to do one of my favorite episodes, The Girl in the Fireplace, from season 2 of The New Era, which is David Tennant's first season. Great, great, great episode.
He's coming back, David Tennant?
He's
the Doctor again?
Yeah,
that doesn't happen.
Some really good stuff. It has not quite happened yet. They've teased a little bit in the 50th anniversary, so a decade ago, which is probably my favorite episode of the 50th anniversary. But I'm really interested about how it's going to go. I've been a little out on Doctor Who for a minute, but I'm excited to jump back in as this new era enters.
Nice. Amazing. So that's what you got going on. Anything else? You're dragon flying every once in a while?
I'm dragon flying every Mondays. I think we're on a break these past 2 weeks, so it's a great time to catch up on the previous episodes. But that is on twitch.tv/DMPhilly on Mondays at 8 p.m. Eastern. We play D&D in space. A very, very fun time. I'm having a blast there, playing a very Doctor Who-like character. Check that out. What else is happening? Is there anything else happening? I watched a lot of Monk. I'm in a joke. To you,
yeah.
When you were,
I think you mentioned this on the podcast.
Yeah, Tony Shalhoub is
Galactus.
And so I've been watching a lot of Monk recently.
But the best part of that was, I was like, okay, that's ridiculous. And then you said, like, yeah, I just wanted to send you a spoiler that could seem believable. that was the post credit sequence. It's like, Kevin, you think Tony Shalhoub as Galactus is a believable spoiler?
Yeah,
I thought
sure.
about it a little bit more. I was like, hey, you know. You twist your head from a certain angle.
Yeah, twist your head from a certain angle. Imagine the helmet on him. Yeah.
I feel like Monk's boss would be a better Galactus.
Oh, Ted Levine?
Yeah, Studemeyer, is that the character's
Sottlemyre.
Name? Sottlemyre.
A.K.A. Yeah. Buffalo Bill.
Correct.
Like, he has such a great voice.
He's
such
got
a great
like
voice.
A great mouth-chin
yes.
area for Galactus.
I think that's very accurate. He also, voiced Sinestro in the Justice League animated series, which actually, shout out here, most recently Kevin Conroy passed, and that is a major, major, major tragedy.
I'm sure that's going to come up as we're going to be talking more DC, and especially once we get into some Batman conversations. But yeah, Kevin Conroy, who is the voice actor who played Batman in the 90s animated series, basically anytime Batman was voiced with like the voice that you know in your mind as Batman, he is gone, and that is really, really sad. That was like right before your birthday,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, I think like the day before. It was really, really, really a tragedy and a major loss, I think, in comics and the entertainment industry as a whole. He has a really great story about 9/11 and helping out during that time. I think you should Google it and check it out. It's really great. But yeah, I just also wanted to shout that out because I realized that happened while we were gone and it is just such a loss.
Yeah.
I
grew up with those cartoons.
Yep.
I think that you and I have both said, at least offline, like if we had the bandwidth, it would be like full on Batman, the Animated Series podcast at some point in time. But I just don't know how we could do that. But hit me really hard. I'm glad that you brought it up. And I'm sure he's going to be along the ride in some capacity as we go into the DC projects here pretty soon. Happy belated birthday, by the way, Kevin.
Oh, thanks. I'm old and sad.
Yes. Well, what else is new?
Yep.
All right. Well, we will be talking about all sorts of stuff next week. Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special. Any final Marvel sign-offs that we can do for the time being? Because I think that the next time you and I will talk about Marvel after that will probably be Ant-Man,
which would be my guess.
Yeah, because I think it's going to be Ant-Man, and then I think probably Secret Wars is on the other side of that. So
is that what's after it?
I think, is it Secret? Secret Invasion.
Secret Invasion, gosh.
Okay. Yeah, Secret Wars is still a ways away, but Secret Invasion I'm really excited about. So it'll be a minute before we talk more Marvel. We'll be doing some Marvel next week, talking Guardians of the Galaxy's holiday special. Maybe we can finally get some Groot takes in here. I know we owe the people Groot takes. And anything else that we can get into, write into us, super@postshowrecaps.com. Hit us up on Twitter @KevMahadeo, @RoundHoward, should Twitter still be a thing, or you can find us wherever else. We are on the internet on those handles, including the Post Show Recap Patreon Discord, patreon.com/postshowrecap. We will be back next week with more. Until then, everybody take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.